Support for Commodity Week comes from the Friends of WILL and from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. With crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the June 9 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Ellen Dearden of Ag Review out of Morton, Illinois, Greg Johnson of the Andersons from right here in Champaign County, and Al Kleiss of Kleiss Commodities out of Minnesota. Commodity Week, of course, a production of Illinois Public Media. You can find us online at willag.org, willag.org.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.
Well, let's start our program as usual by beginning a list of items that we should talk about. We'll start with you, Ellen Dearden of Ag Review.
Well, since USDA didn't make any significant changes on domestic balance sheets and nothing on acreage on corn or beans, I think we need to remember this is a futures market looking ahead, and we need to be cognizant of the grain stocks and the acreage reports looming at the end of the month.
Greg Johnson of the Andersons.
Well, it wouldn't be a Commodity Week program if we didn't talk about the weather and crop conditions across the United States. So I think those are very good topics to touch on throughout the day.
And Al Kleiss from Minnesota.
Yeah, we're very much into a major weather problem in the northern and western part of the Corn Belt. And with the acreage shifting further north and west each year for the corn and soybean market, when I've looked at it, we're having a pretty major problem develop in about 18% of the corn area and about 23% of the planted soybean area.
Well, let's start there with you. First, explain where you are geographically, and then I believe you have a couple of offices that are in the Dakotas, too.
10 miles where my main office is, about 10 miles straight west of downtown Minneapolis, but I have offices out in Willow Lake and Watertown, South Dakota, and they became very concerned, you know, a week ago with the lighter soils that some of the wheat was beginning to shrivel up. Quite a few of the winter wheat acres that were planted early, looked really good a month ago, have been zeroed out by crop insurance. They are allowing them to cut that for hay, which has become very short. They are forecast in Watertown, South Dakota, have highs of 95 to 97 degrees tomorrow with 30-mile-an-hour winds. They cool down a little bit on Sunday and then crank right back up into the high 90s on both Monday and Tuesday, followed by a possible rain. There's going to be significant damage done to the spring wheat crop in the next 4 to 5 days. And if that rain doesn't develop, I think we could see a substantial reduction in the wheat yield in those areas and corn yield in future reports.
Yeah, so how far do we have to move these dry conditions to really have a problem with the corn and soybean growing regions? And just I'm geographically trying to put it all in my mind.
I think the key really when you look ahead to Monday's report from the USDA is what happens in Iowa. It seems like every year we have 20-25% has some type of challenge, either early in the season or later in the season. But if this was to get into the northwestern Iowa, very fertile area, southwest Minnesota, then I think you have more than 30% of the corn and soybean acres being impacted. Then I think you really have something significant that can develop.
Greg Johnson, have you been keeping your ear down to see what basis levels have been doing across the United States? And do they reflect a problem in particular for the corn and soybeans? And I'm sure you're watching the wheat as well in those areas.
Yeah, we're seeing basis levels for new crop values improve, especially in areas like central Illinois, the Decatur area, Indiana, Ohio, where the thin stands, the uneven stands, the prevented plant acres, all are going to take a toll on the size of the corn crop. And I think the end users realize that and realize that basis levels are probably going to have to get better in those areas. The one thing is there's a pretty good carry in the market. So right now, I think basis levels are improving on old crop as well as some people figure they might as well hold on to old crop corn because that's a sure known quantity and quality And they can always carry that into new crop, especially if the new crop is sizably less than what we thought a month ago.
Ellen Dearden, in your area, and I made a trip up to watch the Peoria Chiefs play last night. That's the Cardinals Farm Club. I'm wondering, because the crops actually from here to there really look pretty good. That's from the road. I haven't been back out on top of them for about a week or so, but they sure look like they're in pretty decent shape. What do you think?
The beans really have emerged here over the last week's time and are filling in a little bit. What I've noticed is from the air, there's still a lot of areas within fields that have very thin or very poor stands. We had 2 weeks ago today a hailstorm come through this little area east of Peoria, and that took some of these stands down even further. So I would say that the crop looks better than it looked 2 weeks ago, but it doesn't look as good as it looked last week. Now, I guess my big question is, when we look at these Monday conditions report, if those are actually as of Sunday and we have 2 or 3 or 4 days of hot temperatures under our belt, will those numbers decline considerably? Or if those views are taken on Friday afternoon before much of the heat, I don't think those are going to show any deterioration at all.
Yeah, I'll jump in here because I've talked to USDA about this in the last couple of weeks. I've had some email conversations with Lance Honig, and then the folks upstairs here, the Ag Economist upstairs in Mumford Hall at the University of Illinois, have been looking into these numbers too. And so our understanding is that most all of those, because of the internet, and this changed over the last two decades, that they used to be a Friday afternoon or a Saturday or a weekend kind of look at the marketplace, but most of them are done by Extension and FSA folks who go out on Monday morning and then report in that morning on conditions. So I think probably we can understand that those will be a pretty good reflection of the marketplace as it relates to, you know, what the crop looks like on Monday. So it'll be interesting to see what those numbers look like. Outclass, you mentioned something that piqued my curiosity. An anniversary of what were you talking about early on in the program?
I do a lot of hand-drawn charts, and if you look at next Tuesday, it turned out to be a major high in the corn market in 2016 and a major low in 2015. So it's next week is one of those two, you know, very critical change of trend weeks. And it's just kind of ironic that as we're seeing things fire up in here, that we're coming into what I have marked in my chart as very key, not only week, but specifically next Tuesday, the 13th, a very key day to watch.
Hey, Greg Johnson, when we popped up above 350 and we started to move the market higher than that for the grains or outside of the range that it had been in, did farmers reward the market with very much corn? And really what I'm asking is, how much corn do you think they had left?
They did. Not until this week. Farmers have been very tight holders. They know that the last 4 years we've had rallies in June and July. Some years the high comes in June. As Al said, last year, the year before, it didn't come until July. So farmers know that if they held on to it through 8 months of basically sideways markets from fall till now, they didn't lose anything. They didn't gain anything. And so they were doing everything they could to generate cash flow other than sell grain, putting on basis contracts, DP advances, borrow more money. And now that we've gotten a little rally, they are rewarding that market. The funds are buying back contracts, but the farmers are selling old crop corn. That hasn't translated into new crop sales yet, but I think farmers were probably 60% sold before this rally, and now they've probably sold, I would guess 10, 15%. They're probably getting close to 75% sold. There's still another slug of old crop corn that needs to be sold, but the farmers are doing a pretty good job of scaling up selling. Every time the market makes a new high, they're rewarding the market. So there's still some more old crop corn that needs to be sold, but we still haven't reached those levels yet on new crop corn where the farmers think that that's a good enough price to really make, you know, strong new crop sales.
What's their next price target for old crop, do you suppose?
Well, the old high was three $3.95. I think if we can take out $3.95, somewhere between that $3.95 and $4 on the July futures, I think farmers will sell another slug of corn.
So we call these the Vegas bushels?
No, I think...
Or is it too much for that?
Yeah, there's still too much for Vegas. We really should be, I guess they should be, in historically, they've had a lot bigger percentage sold at this point. So they're holding on to more bushels. So I guess those bushels would still be Vegas bushels, and then that last 20%, yeah.
And how do they deal with them, in your opinion, Ellen Dearden?
I think you just have to be a flat price seller on this rally. I think we've held on to bushels long enough. I guess my big concern about selling bushels here or in the next 15 cents or so is for the livestock guy who may be short hay already and being pretty concerned about feed needs in his area.
Why is that?
I don't think he'll sell old crop at all, and will try to hold together old crop supplies of feed any way he can. I think there's real concerns that this dryness in the Dakotas is going to reach down into feeding areas in Nebraska and Iowa.
So that brings us to a differentiation, Al Kleist, between the eastern and the western Corn Belt, or maybe we could say the northwestern part of the Corn Belt, the Dakotas, parts of northwestern Iowa, I would think, some of Nebraska, where they really are going to think about what their storage is for corn at this point, and the difference between Vegas bushels and maybe bushels that need to be fed to an animal. Is that right?
Yeah, I think historically, and again this year, we had such huge crops in the fall of 2016 that I think what Greg said, we have more corn than that in the northwestern part of the belt. I'm guessing people are 50 to 60% sold. We had some of the elevators in South Dakota where we monitor basis that were bidding 301 on Monday, and now they're bidding 307. So the corn market went up, 15 cents during the course of the week, but the cash bids are only 5 to 6 cents higher because there's just a huge amount of old crop corn that's beginning to come in. New crop basis out there also is beginning to improve as they're becoming very concerned about where they're going to originate bushels for the trains next winter.
Ellen Dearden, when you looked at this morning's report, the USDA numbers, beyond the changes that came in the domestic numbers for soybean and wheat, was there anything else that you found of interest?
Well, we continue to see stocks of corn in the world go down. And I think that, the domestic look and the world look in corn are maybe two different viewpoints. I also noticed that major exporters of corn, when you take the U.S. out, just the year-to-year comparison, there's almost double the amount of corn available for export from Brazil, Argentina, South Africa than there was a year ago. So there's going to be pretty stiff competition against the U.S. for corn export business. So we better not lose the ethanol business.
So just so folks are up to speed, the new crop corn numbers look like this, a 2.11 billion bushel corn carryout. That would be for next year, 2.295 for this fall. The average cash price at $3.40 for the corn, $9.30 for soybeans, $4.30 for wheat. A 495 million bushel carryout for next year for soybeans, or for the crop we've got in the ground now, and 450 for this year. Soybean carryout goes from 1.16 to 924 million bushels. And you did mention some changes that came on the world numbers. Those look like 37 million bushels lower for the corn for this year. For the 2017-18 crop, I mean, soybeans up 125 million and the wheat up 107 million bushels. Anything else, Al, that you've been talking with your clientele base about corn or soybeans, either one, for new crop?
Well, for new crop, we had quite a bit of stuff forward sold and it was up over $10 on the beans. Most of our producers need to get the futures market up in the area of 420 to 440 before they have any type of bottom line profit. So we've been patient. It's been a frustrating winter watching the market move sideways. But now I think if we look at the last several years, we get a 3 or 4 week rally. We get up to some marginal profit levels, but you better be in a position where you're selling into that rally, because global numbers, as Ellen had reported, are still very large. I think I looked at the increased crop size in Brazil and Argentina from this year to last year. We've got about 1.7 billion bushels more corn available from South America that's going to work its way into the export market. So even though we might be seeing a tight, you know, improvement in our supply-demand situation within the U.S., you still have to be realistic. And I would just really like to get these corn up to 440 to 450 so we could get some hedges put on, some puts bought, and try to stabilize the farm income.
You think that's really possible?
Yeah, all it does is take another, 3 weeks like this week, 15 cents a week for 3 weeks, it's here to 450.
Yeah, that would change the carryout to what, 1.15, 1.5,
1.6? I'm at about 1.7 now. I'm about 1.7 now using, I'm cutting harvested acres by 1 million acres and then taking the yield down to 168. If we see Iowa crop conditions fall and nationwide crop conditions not necessarily be lower on the 12th, but on the 19th, then I think you have the impetus to say the yield's down to 165, which takes end projected ending stocks down to 1.5 billion. What could prove that wrong would be if we get, you know, massive amounts of rain over this weekend and later next week in the Dakotas, we get timely rains in the eastern and central Corn Belt, then that could be, you know, bad analysis. But if we continue to see this dry weather pattern spread into Nebraska, southwest Minnesota, and Iowa, you're going to have a hard time getting 165 bushel national average yield.
But you're already to 1.7 billion bushel carryout on current conditions.
Correct. That's right.
Anybody else that low? Ellen Dearden?
No, I'm not quite that low, but I'm moving in that direction because I'm at 169 on the yield with lower acres.
And what's the Andersons working with, Greg Johnson?
Well, I don't know if we have an official number, but I think 167, based on the poor stands. I mean, people have not talked about how thin and uneven the stands are, you know, in the eastern Corn Belt. You know, if I don't know if it's a million less acres harvested, but if you use a million less acres harvested and then you knock the yield down, you know, 170.7, that number is going to go up or down, you know, based on crop conditions. Well, the poor start we got off to, we should have that number down. I think if you polled any trader and said, would you take over or under USDA's 170.7, everybody would say under. It's just a question of how much under. So I think really a more realistic number is 167, 168. And then, like you said, you can go up or down from there. But today, 170.7 seems a little too high.
And what carryout figure would you use with that?
With only a half million less harvested acres instead of a million, and then knocking the yield down four, that gets you down to 1.8. So still plenty of corn. But again, that's assuming that we get rain throughout June and July. I mean, I think we're already that low just based on reduced stands. You know, if the weather turns off hot and dry, then you have to take that number down even more.
You don't think cash price, you don't think the futures price is high enough then at this point?
We have not sold any new crop corn, and I think that's the right thing to do. I think with the funds being at a record short position and only having bought back half of their position this week, there's still more room for the market to go up unless weather conditions, you know, start to change favorably. We've gone from that wet pattern in March and April and May into more of a dry pattern, and maybe it's just a short-term, you know, pattern, but until that pattern changes, you know, I think you go with that until you have some idea that this weather's going to change.
Do we have enough information about the soybean crop to make calculations yet?
The soybeans weren't planted as heavily ahead of those heavy rains as what the corn was. You know, corn planted before April 24th is looking very good here in central Illinois. And there was probably 40-50% of the corn that got planted that early. But if the corn, the next 40% got planted before those heavy rains and farmers chose not to replant that corn, you know, they just took the lighter stands.
20% of that corn, I think, got replanted, and it's a month later, but at least it's got even stands now. So I think that last 20% has a better chance, better yield potential than the 40% that got planted with the thinner stands. I mean, there's people that planted 32 to 35,000, and they've only got 20 to 25,000 plants. So that's a substantial reduction, and that's on, you know, like I say, almost 40% of the corn in East Central Illinois, West Central Indiana. So there's going to be some lower yields, and you know, I think, you know, I know that's not the case out west. I mean, in the western corn belt's looking pretty good. It's all about rain, but their stands are looking good. But I think there's enough damage done in Ohio, Illinois, Indiana, Missouri that, you know, you can take those yields down pretty significantly.
Anything else, Ellen Dearden, on new crop corn or soybeans from you?
No, I'm really biding my time on new crop beans. Like Al, we did some selling early, and I'm not willing to make further sales at this stage of the game.
All right, let's get a final word, I think, from each of you at this point. Al Kleiss, we'll start with you, and you can take some time if you want.
All right, so thank you for calling me to participate in the show, first of all. And the problem with corn stands is not just in the eastern corn belt. We've had a lot of people having to replant corn and a huge number of soybeans being replanted. We had cold, wet rains, or cold rains and cold conditions in the end of May, and that's really made for a miserable tilth to our soil, poor stands, and overall just crop yields. Some of the farms that we work with that would normally have 220, 240 bushel yield potential are telling me best case 180 to 190. So this has been in a year where we just seem to continue to have problems from going from way too wet to way too dry, and our yield potential in the northern western part of the Corn Belt is going to be significantly less than it was last year, and I think could end up being below trend.
Al Kleiss, of course, is with Kleiss Commodities. He's out of Wayzata, Minnesota. Ellen Dearden is with AgriView in Morton, Illinois. Your final word?
I'm still watching this U.S. dollar. We've been slowly deteriorating, working lower, and on Friday we had a pretty big pop in the dollar. I'm sure it has to do with the situation in Britain with the hung now leader of the pack. So I'm going to be watching this dollar. I want to keep it weak. That puts the U.S. in a much better position to export ag commodities.
Anything on the cattle before I let you go, too?
The cattle market has been very jumpy all week. We've just been all over the place. I am not willing to be a seller, particularly looking at the October, Dec, or Feb. I think they're undervalued in relation to the August. The market that makes me more nervous than the cattle is the hog market, however, even though it was up fractionally of a dollar on Friday.
And finally, Greg Johnson of the Andersons.
Well, we always advise farmers not to base your marketing decisions on your own back door. You know, if you're a farmer in Indiana, you probably think corn should be $5 a bushel. I would extend that analogy this year and say United States farmers can't just look in their own back window. As Al said, South America's crop continues to get bigger. They have the capacity to plant more acres. So while I am short-term friendly, you know, thinking that this weather problem has not been fully realized yet, we have to keep in mind that even if we take the carryout down from 2.1 to 1.5, we're still going to have corn carried over, and that does send a signal to other countries to plant more corn next year. So we want to reward the rally and take advantage of it because it's typically short-lived.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can always listen to the whole of our program anytime you'd like on our website. The address there is WILLAG.org. We post all of our agricultural programming each and every business day to the website. You can also look us up in iTunes, Stitcher, the NPR One app, and of course, Google Play. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.